From the Minneapolis Star Tribune today, she called the report of a possible assault in the alley behind her house in one of the city's safest neighborhoods and was unarmed when Officer Mohammed Noor shot her. I'm reading Andy Mannix's story about Justine Dam, and Steve Bertrand's been talking about it too. This woman from Australia has died of a gunshot wound to the abdomen. They found a cell phone near her body, according to his report. Just before 11:30 p.m. Saturday, Damond, age 40, called 911 to report a possible assault occurring in an alley near her home. What happened next is hard to imagine. That reporter Andy's on a phone line right now. Andy, you're on WGN in Chicago. Thanks for taking our call. How are you?
Hey, doing well. How are you?
You know, I lived in Minneapolis for a while, and I'm sorry to hear that you guys are continually plagued by these unfortunate police shootings.
Yeah, and, you know, that's kind of important context here. We are just a few weeks off of a very controversial trial of a police officer who shot a man named Philando Castile about a year ago. That was sort of high profile because the passenger in the car, Castile's girlfriend, broadcasted it on Facebook Live. So, you know, some of your listeners may remember that video going around. But the officer was just acquitted by a jury a few weeks ago. So, you know, as you can imagine, the tension between police and the community was already strained before this. So that's, you know, just a little bit of context of where this is coming in.
And that story was so startling, especially with the release not that long ago of video from the camera, which showed the officer firing into the car, that you'd think all the police officers in Minnesota would be on guard to be extra conservative in the use of their weapons. Excuse me. I mean, don't put yourself in harm's way, but make sure you need to discharge your weapons, sir. And what happened? So there's a report of an assault. The police arrive at 11:30 in the evening in a very, very safe neighborhood of Minneapolis. What happens next?
So, you know, there's a lot we don't know, so I'll couch it in that. But, you know, the report from what we can tell from the dispatch was, you know, she heard a woman screaming, thought maybe there was an assault taking place, so she called 911. Like you said, it's at night. She's in her pajamas. She comes out into an alley to, you know, talk to the police officers from what we can tell, because she was approaching the driver's side. The passenger in the squad car, a police officer named Mohammed Noor, fires his weapon. We're sort of unclear why that happened, but, you know, shot through the door of the police car. So over his partner, you know, as you can imagine, that is, you know, there's some questions just about the, you know, is he putting his fellow officers' safety in jeopardy? You know, why this doesn't really seem like a normal maneuver. But, you know, it as you say, strikes this woman, Justine, in the abdomen, and unfortunately killed her.
Have the police said that it was an accidental firing?
No, they have not said either way. They've been so. In Minnesota, our state police are called the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. In situations like this, where it's a high-profile incident, this can be highly scrutinized. It's pretty common for a police agency like the Minneapolis Police to have them investigate it, so they're not, you know, perceived as having a conflict of interest in having their internal affairs officers investigate it. So they did that sort of right away on Sunday. You know, they didn't wait. They didn't wait to do that. They did that very quickly. And in doing that, they're sort of deflecting, you know, their responsibility, I think, to answer questions about this. Because
Right. They're
saying, well, it's an open investigation. You know, we got to wait for the BCA, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, to do their thing. So we've heard very, very little from Minneapolis police at all, other than the chief coming out with a statement yesterday saying she's got a lot of questions too and you know, asking for a speedy investigation. But at this point, they have offered nothing in the way of clarity in terms of, yeah, was it an accidental fire? Was there, you know, what did this officer have reason to believe his life was in jeopardy? And, you know, unfortunately, you know, a lot of these incidents have some kind of video component. The officers were wearing body cameras, but they weren't recording in this incident, so it You know, I don't think we're ever going to have that objective video record.
But they
And
were in
that,
their squad
that
car. When they roll up, they're obviously in
yeah.
their vehicle. So it's not unlawful for them to not have their body cameras rolling at that point, right?
It's not unlawful. The policy is a little bit nuanced. I mean, there are certain situations where the policy says you must have your body camera on. If you're arresting somebody, if you are, you know, even pulling someone over for a traffic stop. But in terms of, yeah, when you're just in your squad car, you know, the language is a little fuzzy in terms of they leave it up to the judgment of the officer. You know, a question I and I think a lot of other people have are if he's in a situation where he's drawing his firearm, you would
Yeah.
think that that would be a situation in which it would be appropriate to have that recording going as well.
Yeah,
But
right.
again, you know, did it happen so fast you didn't have time to do it?
Well, how long was she at the window of the driver's side?
So we've gotten conflicting reports about that. We're really not sure if they exchanged, you know, if they were talking for a minute or if they even exchanged a single word or if she just kind of walked up there. You know, a lot of what we know for sure at this point is based on sort of where she was lying after the shooting. So she was very, you know, near the driver's side window, basically. But yeah, we don't really know if there was an exchange that took place, if so, what that exchange was. You know, I mean, the demand for more information is really palpable here.
Yeah, I don't
Community
think the
and
cops do
politicians.
any. Yeah, I don't think the cops do anybody a favor. I know they got to do their investigation. Sometimes releasing information too soon jeopardizes what witnesses will say because they've heard a report on the radio, so they'll try and jibe with that or not. But I think a lot of times they're so cautious that they do
Yeah.
everybody a disservice. I mean, answer some of the basics. The race, particularly when race is involved, but it's not in this case, right? I mean, she's a Caucasian woman, nor is not African American. Is he Somali American?
He is Somali American, which does, I think, you know, create a level of complication, I guess, to put it lightly.
Yeah, I guess you're
You know,
right.
we don't really. I mean, I'll tell you that I'm screening my calls today because you know a lot of people with theories about that like to call us and ask why we're not taking certain angles that you know just aren't factually based. But you know,
Well, the
I
point
mean,
there
it's
being,
also.
if I may, what you may be alluding to is the fact that there is a rift in the Minneapolis, in the Twin Cities communities about the Somali Americans and the and other Minneapolitans, Caucasian Americans. There's a rift between the Somali community and the rest of mainstream Minnesota. But that's still, whatever that is, doesn't have anything to do with this officer shooting that lady. Unless we knew something else specifically about them or the incident, and we don't. If here's a scenario that I wonder if anybody is imagining. The police are responding to a report of an assault in an alley. I heard woman screaming, and then they pull up, and a woman is coming running at them. Maybe she's part of some sort of exchange. And she has something in her hand and she comes up to the window. Okay, that's a scenario where I can imagine the cops would be on guard. I mean, that's the only scenario I can imagine. Otherwise, it's just you've got to imagine it was a mistake that the off, but why would he have his gun withdrawn from the passenger side inside the squad car pointing across his partner? You can't imagine that he would even have the gun in his hand at that point.
Yeah, you're very well articulating my inner monologue, you know, as we've been just in the newsroom trying to figure this out. No explanation seems to make perfect sense. You know, yeah, a lot of things you're saying are, you know, she had a cell phone. There was a cell phone found near the scene. Did that, you know, in this situation, in the darkness, appear to be a weapon? We just don't know. And that's, you know, and to your point before about the police officers not doing them any favors, I mean, on its face, the information we know is a woman called 911 and the officers came and shot her. And that's a really sort of troubling message without the nuanced detail or some sort of explanation, whether it ends up being an accident, whether it ends up being a move of panic because he thought he saw a weapon.
Right.
You know, whether there's some element of this that we just have no idea about yet, I think whatever that is sort of needs to come out sooner than later, because the conclusions that people are drawing are, you know, it causes people to panic. It causes people to get frustrated. And as I mentioned before, there's already some frustration with the police relations here. So, yeah, I think that there is a great need for more information.
Front page story across Australia. You note in your story, the Sydney Morning Herald's headline yesterday was American Nightmare. And that's funny because I'm calling you from Chicago. I mean, we know about people shooting people, cops shooting people, people shooting cops. This sort of thing per capita does not happen that often in the Twin Cities, but you've had a few high-profile cases, that's for sure. No body camera video in this case. You know, and the other thing, though, is that in that previous case where that diamond girl took the real-time, when she was FaceTiming, or not FaceTiming, live-streaming on Facebook, you understood that the officer sort of panicked. You could hear it in his voice, and later you could see that by the video, he just reacted too quickly and inappropriately. And that's my guess what's happened here. You'd think that they would, I don't know how you train the officers in Chicago or Minneapolis to de-escalate rather than, you know, back away from the car. Good grief. If you're in the car, I don't know, roll out of the car. Don't shoot across your partner. But it just seems like too many of these police officers are too quick to pull the trigger these days. There's another inner monologue.
Training is definitely something that we are interested in. You know, what kind of training did this particular officer have? He hadn't been on the force that long, but, you know, they don't just hand out police badges to anybody. You know, he went through a lot of training. He got a license from the state board that issued that license. We have done some, because of these past incidents, we actually had two over the past 2 years. Another guy named Jamar Clark, an unarmed black man, shot by a Minneapolis police officer in sort of a struggle. You know, we have really looked hard at that de-escalation training. You know, things like there's sort of these like warrior mentality kind of conferences that the officer in the Castile case, you know, we found out had gone to. So we're sort of interested in are they subscribing to a philosophy that maybe would, you know, I mean, we can't get into the heads of these guys in these moments, but you know, maybe lend itself more to that, you know, when you pull your gun out.
Yeah,
sort of aggressive.
you see it all the time. I mean, frankly, cops often arriving on a scene are doing so because somebody has done something wrong, and often they've done something specifically that the officer asked them not to do. You know, put up your hands or put your hands down or get on the ground. It's too often people don't cooperate, and the cops just get super hostile right now, and they've got a gun, and they get to use it. And I don't know what needs to happen, but, you know, you don't need to play patty cake with these people, and you can't put yourself in jeopardy. But we've got to figure out a way to de-escalate the tension, and all of that testosterone pouring out I don't think is doing anybody any good.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we all want to make sense of these. I mean, so with the Castile thing, it's different. You know, again, as far as we know, he did have a firearm. He had a license to carry it.
Yeah.
And all that. But, you know, I don't know. The fact that there was a weapon in that one makes it, I think, different than this one, which is, as far as we know, I mean, we know they certainly didn't recover any kind of weapon on the scene. I think it makes it a little bit harder for people to wrap their mind around. And, you know, I mean, sometimes you wonder if you have all the training in the world and how you're going to react in that moment of panic, you know, where it is usually a matter of a few seconds, you know, maybe you don't really know. So, you know, in a way it's, I don't want to oversimplify it, but, you know, I think that, you know, the training thing goes so far, but people aren't used to being in a situation like this, and when it happens, you don't get much warning.
Yeah, right. You only get one first time. Andy Mannix is on a phone line, reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I've got quite a few questions about this incident, Andy. Just give me one more minute, and we'll wrap this conversation up on WGN. I've just got a few more minutes, Andy, but a lot of questions and calls from our listeners. Will you try and answer a couple of questions for us?
Yeah, happy to.
And by the way, I know that you can't. I mean, the information is so limited, but let's just hear what's on some folks' minds. Don, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. Something in the story just didn't ring true to me. I read that this officer has had three major complaints against him. One has been dismissed, and two are currently active, and they are not minor incidents. Why is this officer still on the street?
What about that, Andy?
Yeah, and we don't really know the nature of those at this point. How the public data laws work here is if he's disciplined, then we would be able to get a lot more of what went into that investigation, what the outcome was. You know, a lot of police officers get complaints filed against them and stay on the force. You know, I mean, anyone can file a complaint against a police officer. It's really up to that investigation to determine whether or not it is a legitimate complaint and then, you know, what the outcome should be. And if it is punishment, it could be that a police officer would be dismissed if it was a serious enough complaint. But, I mean, it's not uncommon to see, police officers who, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, they say kind of the first on scene are the most likely to get a complaint filed against them just because they're sort of in the action, you know, in the moment. There's just a higher likelihood someone's going to leave feeling like they weren't treated.
I understand that. But thank you for the call, Don. I'm going to go from you to Melissa because Melissa, though, says when those officers arrive on the scene, I said there's way too much testosterone. What did you want to say, Melissa?
I just want to say it's not testosterone. It's called adrenaline. You're talking about people who have to go onto a scene. They're running into the problem. They're not running away from the problem.
Yeah. No, I think that,
I'm not justifying what happened because I don't know what happened. Nobody knows what happened, and I'm fair and impartial, but you have to understand it. It's not testosterone. It's adrenaline.
It's ungrateful. It's impossible, difficult work. I don't think we're grateful enough. We take the cops for granted. We wish they weren't there when we see the cherries in our rearview mirror, but then when you need them, you really want them on the scene, and you do want them to get in harm's way. It must be both. I'm going to stand by testosterone, but adrenaline, you bet. And one last call. Lee, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi. Hey, I live out in a fairly major crime-free area, and I recently witnessed, and I'm getting a call, sorry. I recently witnessed a Caucasian woman be stopped in a church parking lot, and she just didn't get it. And the police, as I was walking in, I noticed her, you know, giving her clear instruction, and she's like, oh, I'm so sorry, but just let me get my purse, let me get my book. And they became very quickly very agitated, and the same thing could have happened. We'll know as time goes on. But as a person, if I am stopped, right or wrong, I have to clear my head and follow instruction.
Well, that is so lost on so many people, and I think you are so right, Lee. Thank you for the call. I'm out of time. Andy, can we call you again maybe in the next few days as this story evolves and we find out more information?
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. Good work up there. I'm a big fan of your newspaper. Keep writing and we'll call you again, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Andy Mannix writes for the Minneapolis Star Tribune.